Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello, this is Matt Halloran again, your host for Top Advisor Marketing, joined with Kirk Lowe as always. But we are at the SEI Conference in Chicago, and we have a special guest with us today, John Anderson, the Managing Director and Head of Practice Management. We're really excited because if you have a chance, type in John Anderson blog or John Anderson with SEI, and you're going to find his blog. And we are going to cover one of the things that he discussed on his blog, which Kirk and I thought was absolutely exceptional. So, John, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about the five clues to begin. So let's break that down. What do you mean by the five clues and how does it apply?
Well, I think when we're talking a lot about advisor branding, we're talking a lot about how advisors can grow by referrals. And there always seems to be a disconnect between what we hear advisors say they're doing and what they're actually doing. So one of the things I like to do is really kind of focus on their actions versus what they say. In many cases, we'll see advisors that are trying to brand themselves around things like comprehensive planning, but all the communications are purely around market and they're investment focused. And that's one of the keys that I see a lot is how they're really positioning themselves, how they're sending out communications, how they're branding themselves. Is it what they say they're doing or what is it they're actually doing?
Well, one of the biggest problems, and I find this all the time, and Kirk and I have talked about this before, is the pitfall of that is you want to hold yourself as out as one thing, and then your clients are coming in and saying, well, John, my performance stinks. Well, hold on, I'm a financial planner, but they're not supporting it with their marketing material.
You're absolutely right. You're sending the message every day. You know, there was an article I read years ago, and frankly, that article was life-changing. It was called Through the Client's Eyes. Oh. Probably came out in Registered Rep, Financial Planning, something like that in about 2000 or 2001. So again, this goes a long time ago. But what I saw in that article, which really just kind of made me really step back and think about what we do, is the article said something to the effect of, you could be a great planner. You've worked with this client together. You've done a great financial plan. You have helped them in their retirement with their assets. You've helped them get their estate plan in order. You've done all of the great things that financial planners do. And yet, quarter after quarter, when they come into the office, the very first thing that you do is you show them their performance report.
Absolutely.
You show them their statement.
Yep.
And what you're doing is, because you think it's quantifiable and you think it's interesting, you show them that through their eyes. What they see is, well, if they're showing me the statement first, it must be important to you.
Absolutely.
So therefore, it must be important to me. And you're beginning to brand yourself in a way that is kind of contrary to what you think you do or what the value is that, quite frankly, I think you believe you deliver. It's really about that communications that you send. What are they seeing versus what you think you're doing?
Well, and that really gets us into the second clue here, which is, you know, every advisor is told at every one of these conferences, you have to do client events. You know, it's the greatest way to build your business. So let's talk about client events, because you talk about something very specific here.
Yeah, you know, when I look at client events, I think client events have to be systematic.
Yep.
They have to be repeatable. They have to have a message that is not we're going to sell you, but we're really here to appreciate you. So I see a lot of advisors that maybe haven't done a client event in years, and they come to a conference. They hear that client events are a great way to build referrals. And when they do that, they bring that client referral or that bring a guest appreciation event, and they don't get a good turnout. So they're disappointed because they haven't set the tone for this is the type of meeting that we're going to have. They haven't set the agenda for it. This isn't a sales process. Clients, I think, want to make sure that their friends and family aren't going to get sold something. So they really got to maybe get comfortable with two or three of these before they actually start bringing that guest for the referral.
Well, and I'm so glad that you say that, because one of the things I say in Top Advisor Coaching all the time is one does not a trend make. And you have to repeat something over and over again, just like what we've talked about with content marketing, just like you're talking about here, making it so that there's an expectation. There's almost a culture that you surround. I'm going to digress for a minute, because there's an advisor in my neighborhood who does this better than anybody I've seen. He has this exclusive Christmas event. And the only way you get in is if you're a client of his, and it didn't start off with as many people. There's like 300 people clamoring for tickets to this now, and it is the event in Kalamazoo, Michigan to be seen. But it didn't happen overnight. And I remember Ron Carson, my old boss, said, Matt, the first peak meeting had 10 people there. The last peak meeting I was there had 700 people there. So you do need to be patient. And John, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think it's all about the consistency and all about the expectation more than almost anything else.
So number three. So number one, we were talking about branding yourself, making sure you're branding yourself as a comprehensive financial planner. Number two is making sure that your client events are actually happening regularly. And if you don't have a great turnout, don't be disappointed. Try again. Set a good culture surrounding it. What's the third of the five clues?
Well, to me, it's really about the expectations. You know, we talk a lot about what it's going to cost.
Mm.
And we talk about marketing expenses, and we talk about the expense of marketing. You know, to me, it shouldn't be an expense.
Uh-huh.
It's an investment.
Yeah.
It's an investment in your business. And it is amazing when you read all the different research reports that are out there that say that, you know, the average marketing expense is 2%, 3%, maybe up to 5%. Mm-hmm. But I can't find another business in the world that we could invest in our own business.
Yeah.
And start earning 100 basis points on money that's invested with
yeah.
us. It is a reoccurring revenue that doesn't stop mm-hmm. as long as they're a client.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we think about marketing as something that we don't want to do or it's after everything else. The best advisors that I'm seeing today look at marketing as an investment in their business, one that generates huge amounts of reoccurring revenue, mm-hmm. not as an expense.
Well, and Kirk and I did a podcast called Marketing Versus Sales, right? And really talked about the difference between those two. And I think that's the mindset. A lot of the advisors that are here started off selling insurance. I mean, really, that's how a lot of us get started in the industry. And so there's that sales mentality, right? You know, 1,000 dials, you know, 100 appointments, 10 closes, right? So we know that, right? The law of large numbers. This isn't the law of large numbers. And you have to have ramp-up speed. And Kirk talks about this often, that you have to gain a critical momentum with marketing. And if you're only spending 2% on marketing, you're never really going to get over that hump. And other industries, they're spending 25%. Of their gross on marketing, and we're in the financial services industry, not even getting close.
Yeah, I'm kind of bumping here. Everybody's like wondering, where's Kirk today? Anyway, I find that a lot of advisors just really struggle with where to spend money. I think that's one of the big problems is that there's a lot of silo marketing companies out there and consultants who are telling them to do one thing over the other.
Yeah.
And I find that even if they have a little bit of result from those things, they end up dumping more money. And we've talked to how many people here at the SEI conference this week, unfortunately, that have wasted money on really expensive ways to attract people to their business. And they blow all their money there, and then they mm-hmm. come to us and like, I know I can tell you guys know what you're doing.
Right.
But one of the things that we spend, I take a lot of pride in, is trying to figure out ways that we can create marketing that has momentum or has shelf life. Mm-hmm. So if you create a podcast, for instance, versus doing Facebook ads, mm-hmm. the podcast sticks around. People share it. We know because we get our podcast, this podcast, shared quite frequently, the ones that people start liking
yep.
a lot. The ones where I talk more, you talk less.
I don't know, man. We need to
this
go back and
John
take a look
will probably
at that.
Be our best.
I know, because it's neither of
yeah,
us, mostly.
He's going to take it over. We're in big trouble. Anyway, so think about how you can be a lot more efficient with your marketing dollars. And if you take that mindset, then I think you may start seeing that more advisors start picking up investing more because they know there's a shelf life. It's not a sunk cost, and it feels more like an investment.
Absolutely. All right, so we're still diving into these five clues. What's number four? This has to do, again, with this is more about marketing. What do you got?
Well, this is really understanding what your book looks like. It really understands what your book looks like because what we really are paying attention to, especially today, is many of advisors have built their book of business based on the boomer generation. So we have a baby boom generation that's beginning to retire, or if not already in retirement today. And when you look at your average book of business today, maybe you'll say, well, the average age is 50. But if you look at the age-weighted assets,
mm-hmm.
you're going to find that a majority of those age-weighted assets, you're going to have maybe 64, 65, 66, and you're going to start to see that your book of business, in fact, are beginning to feel, if it not already feeling, but going to feel very soon, this retirement income drawdown.
Yes.
Where you start to see maybe money coming out in that drawdown stage, and advisors are not paying attention to the fact that they need to replenish.
That's right.
This book, they need to start thinking about marketing. And Kirk, I got to tell you a really quick story because I think it's exactly what you were talking about, creating that longevity of the theme of marketing. I ran a race yesterday, and there was a 10-mile race, and I remember one of the signs as I was running by. And my son and I started laughing because it said something to the effect of the pain is only short, but your internet results are going to last forever. So we started thinking about, you know, and I think about this. I think about, you know, that internet result, that podcast or mm-hmm. that something that's going to last for a long time is something that we really want to focus on,
yeah.
especially when we're starting to think about marketing to maybe that younger generation who's going to use more of that internet results. They're going to use more of that technology. They're going to look for more verification via social versus just a recommendation of a friend or family member.
Okay, verification. That is a great word. I don't think we use that enough, but I love how you said that, because that to me is exactly, this is social proof, right? If anybody's ever seen or read anything by Dr. Robert Cialdini, the Six Principles of Ethical Influence, he talks about social proof as one of the biggest ways to be able to build trust very quickly. Another really quick thing that is amazing to me is when your book of business is in that drawdown. I just had just talked to an advisor here, and he's like, yeah, most of my clients are taking income. And I said to him, okay, what is your nut? What do you have to bring in a new revenue every single solitary year to break even? He's like, he looked at me like, oh my God, are you serious? I should know that number. And as a business consultant, I'm like, oh my God, my heart hurts right now, dude.
Well, it's easy to think about the wins. It's easy about think about money coming in. But we all make it in this business so easy for people with automatic RMDs.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a client passing away once in a while. We don't typically pay attention to the money walking out the back door.
Right.
We only pay attention to the exhilaration of the win when money's coming in the front door.
Absolutely. So we've talked about the first of the four clues here. Let's go ahead and jump right into the fifth.
Yeah, this is the one that I think is really the one that really stands out almost more than anything else to me. And it's really one of the biggest passions that I have. And that's really talking about what's the messaging and what's the branding that we have. Unfortunately, what I see in the marketplace is we try to be everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We try to create all of this generic information that we think it's going to cast that very wide net. And unfortunately, because it's so generic, it doesn't resonate at all. Because it's so generic, no action is being taken. It's something that you can pick up on any website, mm-hmm. any newsletter, anything like that. So really, one of the things that I find with regard to marketing is if you're sending out too much generic information, you're not going to get any results at all.
Sure.
But really that forceful, niche-oriented, that one that's targeted, that's the messaging that I really think is more important for most advisors to really focus in on when it looks at building their business.
Well, and you do this, right? You walk the walk here because you have your blog.
Yep.
I mean, you're blogging regularly to your specific target audience, which happens to be advisors specifically, right? So, and I'm glad that you do that because I think more people need to hear that, John. I don't think people understand that, you know, if they're using a canned commentary, that really doesn't help, one, their brand, two, separate them from the other advisors that are out there. But the other thing that a lot of people don't know is it hurts your SEO. So your search engine optimization actually goes down because Google's algorithm looks at if you're sharing the same stuff everybody else is sharing, but they look at custom content differently, which is probably why when I type in John Anderson blog, your blog comes up right away because you're putting fresh new content there on a regular basis.
Yeah, we publish twice a week. I write every Friday. We have a guest post every Tuesday. The guest post is typically an SEI employee, one of three or four people on investments or technology or mm-hmm. millennials. But I typically write on Practically Speaking. But let me give you an idea. What I think is really interesting, when we started this blog, one of the first things that we thought about is we need to have a target audience. And of course, financial advisors is our target audience. We started doing Google Analytics and we started doing Google searches to find keywords and phrases mm-hmm. that maybe helped us be more authentic to the advisor that we were talking about. And the example that I'll give you is we started the first 6 months really of having all sorts of different searches. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, one of the things that we all talk about, is I was thinking about client events.
Mm-hmm.
Client events to me is, you know, prospecting events, is appreciation events or something like that. So I had this little Google search for client events. I never got any hits on it.
Hmm.
And I tried to figure out why. Why is that? Because everybody wants to grow. Everybody does these events. What I found it was the words I was using.
Oh.
When I turned it to advisor prospecting instead of advisor events, it blew up. So one of the things about being authentic and one of the things about being more narrow in your messaging is making sure you're using the words that your target audience uses.
Yeah.
And we've grown this website now. Our blog is called Practically Speaking, by the way. It's Practically Speaking is now in its sixth year.
Wow.
We've been publishing twice a week. And the amount of recognition and search engines and things like that, we're continuously growing pretty dramatically. We're pretty proud of the results that we're getting, specifically because we're targeted at that advisor who wants to build their business.
Kirk actually said in an earlier podcast, and it might even been earlier today, if he wants to get advisors' attention, he puts leads. You know, I mean, there are those key words, right, that we use to get people's attention. So, okay, so there's the five clues. Now, the second section of five clues that your marketing will fail is by the numbers. So there's a lot. This is kind of deep here. So I'm going to let you just wax philosophical on this for a few.
Yeah, so we decided to kind of come up with an exercise. We wanted to give an exercise to really kind of look at the mindset around growth, but to really figure out what you have to do to grow and really what you have to overcome. And we talked a little bit about money walking out the back door and things like that. But we put through an exercise just to kind of give rough numbers around how an advisor really should look at growth. And it's really not necessarily new AUM, but it's getting a new revenue number. So the exercise that we went through looked like this. Let's say, for example, we have $100 million in assets under management. We want to grow our book of business by $10 million, so 110 AUM. What we're really saying is that we want to grow our business by another $100,000, right? Mm-hmm. So when you start to think about how do I grow my business by another $100,000, we have to think about inflows as well as outflows. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to look at what would we say is the amount of drawdown? What's the amount of money that's going to come down? Well, how much money is going to leave during the year? Now, for more mature businesses, we're going to see a higher redemption rate. For less mature businesses, we're going to see a lower. I'm not necessarily the brightest guy in the world, so I like to use easy numbers. I don't like math. So I'm just going to say, let's say we have a redemption rate of 10%.
Okay.
Right? So what that says is if we do nothing, by the end of the year, we'll have about $90 million in AUM. Right? So then we start to think about what's the market impact? How is the market going to affect our business? Because in good years, the market's going to impact it great.
Sure.
In down years, it's going to make that $100,000 goal a little bit more difficult. So let's say, for example, a balanced 60-40 portfolio, which is basically most of your clients, let's say it just goes up 5%. So we're going to give a decent market for ourselves. What that means is by the end of the year, we're going to have about a $95 million. But again, we still want to grow, right? But that $100,000 goal was on $100 million.
That's right, yeah.
Right? So now we have $95 million. So to really get to that $100,000 in additional revenue, we really need to grow by $150,000. Mm-hmm. Make sense?
Yeah.
Good. So we need $15 million in AUM to make up the outflows.
Yeah.
Now, so what I like to look at is to say, take that one step further. If I know I need to grow in this case at $15 million, mm-hmm. $15 million, if I have an average account size of $500,000,
sure.
How many clients does that make?
30,
right. Mm-hmm. So I need to see 30 new clients in 2017.
Yeah.
Take it a step further.
Okay.
Not only do I need to 30 new clients, what's my close rate on the amount of clients that I meet?
Ah.
Let's say it's 50%. I now need to see 60 prospects. Mm. So maybe you have a higher close rate. You know, maybe you only need to see 45 new prospects. Mm-hmm. But when we start to think about putting the plan together and all the things that we've done in the past, now all of a sudden, how am I going to get in front of 45, 50 new prospects in 2017?
And that's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of that mindset of where we have to go. And that's kind of that numbers reality check. And some people will tell you, I've never been in front of 60 prospects in my life.
Wow, that's a lot.
So we have to think about, are we going to ramp up our marketing or are we going to reduce that $100,000 goal?
Sure. Or are we going to be prospecting even a different margin of client, right? So if your average client's 500,000, but if you want to really upscale and start hitting the middle class millionaire, which a lot of people talk about, then you have to have less. You might have to do more work for them. So, you know, for everything you want in life, you have to be willing to give up something proportionate to that want. So what are you willing to give up? Are you willing to give up that much time for an extra $100,000? Man, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of prospecting. Okay, so you gave us the reality check, and you just used a great, and as a coach, I absolutely love when people say this, change your mindset. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how you change your mindset.
Well, that's the end game, is that we have to change our marketing mindset. You know, when I think about what advisors have been doing in the past with regard to marketing, you know, it's the not consistent, not have the budget there. Mm-hmm. We have to really think about what we're in this business, is that really to focus on changing that mindset around growth. Now, to me, one of the first things that we want to start with is really start to think about the type of client that we want to work with.
Okay.
One of the easiest tools is to build out a client persona. Mm-hmm. The client persona is nothing more than a snapshot of what a typical client looks like. Maybe some people call it an avatar.
Okay.
I wrote a piece about this a while back, and I called my avatar or my persona, I called him Gary.
Okay.
Long story, but Gary was my persona. Gary was the 55-year-old corporate-level executive who was concerned about retirement, was concerned about maximizing tax-aware investing, and some philanthropic. So you start to build this who this person is. Mm-hmm. What I like about the persona is it gives you the ability to start thinking about the services you offer. Would it be attractive to Gary? It gives you the ability to think about the brand and the messaging. Would Gary be attracted to an event like this?
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the ability to start researching, and again, using the words that Gary would use.
Yes.
Thinking about the concerns that Gary has. and building your business around a way to attract people like Gary.
Sure.
Because the persona gives you that definition. It also gives you the ability to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody comes to you and says, you know, one of the best ways to build businesses right now is a Social Security workshop.
Sure.
Right. Would Gary go, a 55-year-old corporate executive?
Not at all.
No.
Yeah.
So it allows you to quit wasting your time mm-hmm. on some non-focused marketing activities. So I think the persona is a great way to really start identifying who it is you want to work with and what their concerns are and think about how you can help, in this case, Gary.
Well, I like how you just said that because so many advisors are so focused on demographics, they're not focused on the psychographics.
Yes.
And you just highlighted some psychographics that makes it so that you understand, Gary, you said Gary.
It's Gary.
Kirk calls him Mick, my ideal client. So, which is, I love that. I think that's fantastic. But making it so that you have a much better understanding, and then you start filtering all of your marketing surrounding exactly how you want to get to that. Okay, so what's the second way to change your mindset?
Well, I do think it's increasing the budget. It's paying attention to the investment versus the expense. Let me give you an example. We have a client that we work with in Manhattan. This client does every other month, does a client appreciation dinner with one couple who's allowed to bring a friend.
Okay.
This event is done at a very high-end restaurant, and they rent out the chef's table. Now, the dinner at this chef's table restaurant is about $1,100 every 2 months. That's a pretty expensive dinner, right? What they've quantified, though, is that every other time they meet with this prospect, they get a new client.
Okay.
The average account size is $1 million.
Okay.
Okay. So what's 100 basis points on $1 million?
It's 100 grand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is that worth two dinners?
$2,200, yeah.
Was it worth $2,200? And what's the marketing expense for that client in year two?
Yeah, nothing.
It's zero.
Yeah.
Right? So when we start to think about it, it's an investment.
Yeah.
It's an investment that pays that reoccurring revenue. So think about marketing, as I said earlier, as an investment, not an expense, and increase that budget.
Sure.
Use what you can. Now, you don't have to spend $1,100 per dinner or $2,200 for a new client. But when you start to leverage that and you start to think about the amount of money that's coming in based on what's going out, I think you're going to find that those marketing investments is better than the market. It's
sure.
better than any stock you're going to pick.
Yeah.
It's better than anything else you're going to do is investing in your business rather than investing in some tip or technique.
Well, let me ask you this. So you know, there are some financial advisors out there who going to dinner is like their biggest nightmare. So, and I like that as an example because I've worked with a lot of clients over my time who have done very, very successful, very interpersonal events. Mm-hmm. But let's say they need to build a foundation. So let's talk about how to increase your budget to build a foundation if you're a newer advisor.
You need to think about focusing, maybe I'm going to step back for just a second. You know, when I think about that dinner, it can be kind of scary.
Sure. You're
meeting somebody for the new time. For the first time. But what's interesting about that is that you're coming prepared. You're not just going to wing this, right?
Sure.
You've got in your pocket, you've got some information on maybe a current recent event in the market. You've got some recent political events that are going on in the world. And you're sitting there with your clients who really like you.
Sure.
Who really respect you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be your best salesman.
Yep.
You don't have to sell. This is just a get acquainted. This is an experience. And when you create an experience around something like a chef's table where there's people coming and, you know, the conversation is pretty darn easy.
Yeah.
You know, so I would encourage you to use what's comfortable for you.
There you go.
But at the same time, think about things that your client is going to be your salesperson, not you.
Sure.
And you're not there to sell. You're there just to experience it.
I love it. I mean, I think that really truly is the best way to sell anything. And I love when you can ask the questions, like when you can find out what your client is saying about you. That can be some of the best marketing gold you have.
Yeah, and one of the great things about having a value proposition or a brand and a story is that if you've done a good job of marketing this, your client sitting at that table for dinner should really understand. I mean, they've obviously understand the ideal, the persona, right?
Because
they brought that guest. But they should understand how to market you. Like, for instance, if you have a podcast, they can say, hey, did you, you know, they likely already showcased that podcast, right? So they know, they understand stuff about you. So you can let them do your thing and you can sit there and agree with how great you are.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, if your brand, whatever your brand is about, you want to make sure they introduce you that way.
Sure.
So if you have a comprehensive planning approach, you want to make sure that's what they focus on when they introduce you versus, you know, getting into conversations about stuff that aren't the conversations you want to actually have with people.
Sure. Well, so John, let's dive into that a little bit more deeply, because you have done work on value propositions. This is something that's near and dear to your heart, and it's actually one of the ways to change your mindset. So how do you help advisors create that UVP or unique value proposition?
So when I think about a value proposition, it's to me foundational to who you are. It's foundational to what you do. I can't imagine trying to charge somebody an advisory fee without understanding what the value is I'm going to deliver, right? So value proposition are absolutely the foundation of everything we do. I always start with a quick exercise.
Okay.
The quick exercise for me is just to get you started thinking about the value proposition. It's not going to be the outcome, mm-hmm. but it's going to be the quick thinking about it. So I always say three questions. If you can answer three questions, you have the beginning stages of a value proposition that should resonate with your target audience. You should resonate with Gary.
Sure.
So my questions are, who are the clients that your firm is set up to serve?
Okay.
Like,
good.
Who are they? What are the obstacles they face?
Mm-hmm.
And then what are the solutions that you provide to work on those obstacles?
Okay.
Let me give you an example by that. So I live in Philadelphia, outside of Philadelphia. And if I flip on a light switch, I'm writing a check on a monthly basis to PECO, which is our Philadelphia utility company. So I'm writing a PECO. So let's say, for example, that my target audience is PECO retirees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what are the obstacles? And I'm going to make this very generic. But what are the obstacles that a retiree faces? What are they afraid of?
Oh, lots of running out of money.
Running
that's
going to
be number
that's
one,
the
right?
number one answer for
mm-hmm.
everybody, right? So let's say, for example, I understand that, and I'm going to suggest that my business solution, and again, I'm going to make this very generic, is I create retirement income solutions.
Okay.
So today, when I think about the value proposition, I think about the brand, if you will, that's in the marketplace. I go to LinkedIn profiles for advisors. I go to websites for advisors. I meet advisors daily,
mm-hmm.
and I'll say, hey, I'm John, who are you, what do you do? And they'll always say, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a financial manager, I'm a wealth manager, mm-hmm. I'm a registered rep, I own a financial planning business. And I hear all of these terms that we make up that doesn't mean a thing to anybody else. I'll give you another, I love telling stories. Quick story. So my brother, my older brother, lives down in Birmingham, Alabama. He owns a pawn shop.
Huh?
It's a great business. Have you ever been in a pawn shop?
Oh, unfortunately.
He charges 25% interest compounded monthly.
Oh,
it's ridiculous,
yeah.
right? But if you look him up in the business listings in Birmingham, Alabama, you're going to find him under financial services.
Oh.
Because he provides loans.
Ah, sure.
So think about this. I walk up to a person and I say, hi, I'm John. I'm a financial advisor. That person has to immediately come up with, what does that mean? Are you a mortgage broker?
Shop?
Are you an insurance broker? Do you sell investments?
Yeah.
Are you a pawn shop owner?
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So doesn't it make more sense to walk up and say, hi, I'm John? I create retirement income solutions for PECO employees who are afraid of running out of money.
Preach, brother.
Right?
I'm right there
right.
with you, dude. That's
so to
awesome.
Me, so this is the beginning stages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can start to answer those three questions. I have the beginning stages to say I'm really focused on a specific type of client.
Sure.
And this is the value that I bring. And I love that example because I think it really kind of spells it out for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee for most advisors out there right now, again, look at your LinkedIn profile, mm-hmm. look at your website. It's all going to be so generic words that the clients have no idea.
Sure.
So change it. Think about creating that value proposition and using that value proposition in the conversations that you have on a daily basis.
So your next one really is about the message, right? So you've got your value proposition, which is that foundation, and then the second layer is really your message. So let's talk about that.
All right. Well, it's all about systematizing, and this is exactly what Kurt's talking about, is making sure that message is clear and making it consistent, making sure that the message reinforces the value proposition, reinforces why it's important to that client persona. It is an ongoing I can't say that word.
That's all right.
It's an ongoing reinforcement of that message mm-hmm. that you are here to create in that previous example, that retirement income solutions is very important to this type of client, and I'm the one that specializes. I don't help. I don't suggest. I focus. I specialize and reinforce that this is the type of business that I do, and these are the type of people that I work with.
Well, so I'm not going to try to throw you too much of a Louie here, but I'm sure you hear this a lot, John, because Kirk and I hear this all the time. In fact, we've heard it at this conference, is if I only try to focus on PECA, what happens to all of the other prospects that, or my existing clients might think that I don't serve them anymore? So how do you address that with practice management and marketing?
It's about focus.
Okay.
It's not about firing everybody else.
Good.
It's about specialty, as well as, you know, they're doctors still, they may have a specialty, but mm-hmm. they know the rest of the body, right?
Sure.
It's not like you're cutting out everybody else. I think so many people are afraid of making that specialty.
Absolutely.
So many people are afraid of making a client uncomfortable. You can create a focus in your business. You can create a specialty without ostracizing your client. I would also argue that by the way that you sell, by the way that you have attracted new clients, you probably have a niche and don't even know it.
Absolutely. Yep.
And wow. It's whether it's the psychographics mm-hmm. you're talking about, whether it's a referral source coming from a specific company. I think niches are a lot, there's a lot more niches than people are aware of.
Yep.
And that helping that client persona or even doing a further segmentation in your book should really help you figure out if, in fact, you have a niche.
So let's talk about the niche, and we want to target and use your focus, which is I love that word. That's a great way to. So now I know my focus, John. Now what do I do?
Well, then you start building the tactics.
Okay.
You think about what's going to attract that client persona. What's going to resonate when I'm sending out that message on a regular basis? What's going to resonate with that value proposition? You know, again, I mentioned I'm not going to create a Social Security workshop for a 55-year-old.
Right.
But I am going to think about using technology. I'm going to think about, I just attended a wine tasting event. Now, I'm, by the way, a 55-year-old corporate-level executive, so guess what? I'm my own target audience, right?
You're Gary, man.
I may be Gary in another life. But my point is you got to think about what would attract people like me to an event. Mm-hmm. What would I read if you send me? I can tell you that if you are a planning-focused firm, don't send me what the S&P did for the week.
Sure.
I don't care about the monthly market number. If I wanted to know what the market did, I would look it up.
Absolutely.
I don't need an email from you on Monday to tell me what happened last week,
yep.
right? So think about the tactics and think about the strategies. Think about the way you want to be positioned in the marketplace. I love the idea of the podcasts. I love the idea of white papers, where it allows you to really help brand yourself, those tactics, in a way that your client wants to read it.
Sure.
So once you understand that, the tactics really should come along very well. I also want to think it has to be authentic.
Mm.
Is that I find people trying to do things that doesn't feel natural to them.
Yeah.
They're not good at it. They're uncomfortable with it. So my dinner example,
mm-hmm.
some people think it's the most horrible thing in the world to take out strangers for dinner. Don't do it.
Sure.
Don't do it because if you're not comfortable with it, it's not going to feel natural. If it's not going to feel natural, it's not going to be a good dinner.
Right.
So find something that works for you as well as the target market that you want to be a part
and we
of.
Don't want you to come across as being disingenuous,
yes.
right? And in fact, I remember we were talking about wine events a while ago with a couple of clients of mine, and he said to me, Matt, everybody keeps telling me to try to do wine events, but I hate wine. I was like, well, dear God, you don't want to do a client event then, right?
No.
What about wine? So what he ended up doing is he did a whiskey tasting event.
Wonderful.
Because he loved whiskey, and his clients loved it because everybody does wine events, and he had this sommelier of whiskey. I don't really know what they're called. Whiskeyers? I don't know. But anyway, they had a great time and they were showing him tricks and tips about whiskey. So he started doing it more often, and then all of a sudden, that was his tactic. More people started bringing friends, and all of a sudden he's hanging out with people who love something he loves.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a guy in the room that I can think of right now that has developed an event that everybody wants to be a part of, and it's Sporting Clays.
Oh.
You know, I think guns are the new golf, which is kind of scary in some worlds. But he has created this Sporting Clay event where he only can allow 20 people to come.
Yeah.
And there's a waiting list every year that, wow. hey, if so-and-so can't make it, I know I'm on the I want to get in this. Because Sporting Clays is kind of a unique experience.
Sure.
Right? People aren't used to walking around with shotguns, at least not in my neighborhood.
Probably not in Philly. No.
Exactly.
Not a good idea.
Exactly. But I mean, it's something around you, and it's something around what you want to do. Make it natural. Exactly.
So is Sporting Clays. So I've got a client in Georgia who's he does the same thing with a private duck hunting event.
Perfect.
And it's backed up for years.
Yeah.
And it's so I bring up Dr. Robert Cialdini all the time because I happen to be a big fan, but he talks about the principle of exclusivity.
Yeah.
Right. So if I create a demand surrounding an event and that's one of my tactics, I'm going to have a better turnout. Okay, so we've got one more way to change your mindset. And as a person who does practice management, as a fellow person who does practice management, I'm so happy you bring this up, John. So tell us what the last one is here.
It's about having the focus. It's about having a biweekly or a monthly marketing meeting. Check with your staff. Check with your, I don't know, whether your stakeholders, mm-hmm. people that are involved in your business. Have that biweekly meeting and really check up on your progress. put together a marketing calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the advisors that I know very, very well down in Orlando has used this marketing calendar, and he's put it on a whiteboard in his office.
Yep.
The whiteboard in the office basically says, here's the event we're doing, here's responsible for the event, here's the dollar or the budget that we're going to spend on this event, here's the amount of clients that we're going to see, here's the expected amount of prospects.
Yep.
And he does that on a three-month basis. Every 3 months, he changes that board. What's cool about that is every single person that walks into his, every single staff person that walks into the break room sees that whiteboard. They know the events. They know what's going on. They know who owns it and who has to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that marketing mindset because what he's saying, and again, the subliminal message, right? What, through the client's eyes,
yep.
They know that marketing is important. They know that growth of the firm is important. So using that marketing meeting really checks the progress because, you know, unfortunately, we tend to live in a world that we're one and done.
Yes.
We do something. We sit back. We say, did it work? Did it not work? 6 months later, we try something again. The consistency isn't there. The messaging isn't there. And if we don't have that, then we're just doing a lot of little one-offs and we don't deliver what we really want to do. And that's really deliver that solution.
I'm sorry, what, Kirk?
We need a hallelujah there.
Preach on, brother. Preach on. Well, you know, so Kirk and I have talked about this a lot because I don't know if you've ever seen any of Kirk's videos.
Of course.
Kirk uses that whiteboard all the time. And we, from a practice management standpoint, I call it the big board. And so the big board's in the break room, just like you're saying, and it can have a couple of categories, like if there's an assets under management goal. And when you do your stand-ups, you talk about that. And so that's a great way. And we know from a psychological standpoint that that will help you reinforce the behavior. And I want my team to have massive buy-in. And if they don't, I'm not going to get the best results.
You're exactly right. You know, there's the last example I'll give you is another guy that's in this meeting today. He actually does his compensation for his staff. He does it on a monthly bonus.
Oh.
And the monthly bonus is we're dealing with a lot of millennials. We're dealing with a lot of people. And nothing says motivation like immediate payback.
Absolutely.
So when he has his marketing meetings, he looks at specifically around what's the motivation for everybody in the room. And he looks at compensation, he looks at the metrics, and he basically has everybody bought in monthly, not at the end of the year, not quarterly, monthly.
And that intermittent reinforcement, everybody, and again, from a psychological standpoint, we know that if we're consistently reinforcing the behavior that we want, really frequently, like a monthly and the weekly stand-ups, everybody gets to say hello, congratulations, there's applause. If somebody's not pulling their weight, the advisor doesn't have to be, the owner doesn't have to be the person who necessarily pushes because everybody's got that buy-in.
Exactly, exactly. So I said, you know, bring in your marketing people, bring in your staff, bring in stakeholders. Mm-hmm. I've been in a number of these marketing meetings myself just as an outsider. And sometimes I got to tell you, it's not bad to have somebody, a third party, kind of poke holes in what you're doing.
Yes.
Kind of says, you know, I like to think that we are people that are educated enough about the business, but we're not advisors ourselves.
Yeah.
So we have the ability to say, you know, as a client, here's what I perceive. As a professional, here's the other way I perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of nice to bring in some outsiders to give you kind of a quick look at what you're doing, whether it's marketing or any of the other systems that you do.
It's like being a tourist in your own town.
Exactly.
Right? And like last time I was in Philly, I was there with an old Navy buddy of mine, and I was like, ooh, what's that? And he's looking at me like, well, I see that every day. I was like, ooh, that looks like fun. He's like, what are you talking about? And it was a sandwich shop. It was a, you know, whatever, Philly. And
Cheese
he was
sticks.
Like, yeah. And he was like, ah, that's not a good one. I was like, when's the last time you ate there? He's like, I've never eaten there because nobody ever wanted it. So we ate there and he's like, these are the best. Anyway. So, okay. Closing statements. What else you got for us?
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, what we have to really think about is what we do for a living, right? What we do is we provide advice. That's really the highest value that a client's looking for. When we think about advice, one of the things we have to look at is how do we begin to grow our business? How do we begin to focus that business? So it's really about the value that we deliver. It's really about the persona. And it's really about, can we take a step back,
mm-hmm.
look at our business, and to say, is this what I want to be delivering with my clients? So that marketing mindset is going to be incredibly important. We've got a great story to tell clients.
Yes.
We've got a great story to help clients for multi-generational wealth.
Yeah.
If we don't get that message out, who's going to use it?
Yeah, I think financial advisors underestimate their importance a lot of times. You know, who's more? I mean, you got your priest, your accountant, right? Your attorney and your financial advisor. You know, that's like top when five is family. You know, but I put them last, of course. But that's a personal thing, obviously. All right. Well, John, thank you so much for being on Top Advisor Marketing today. We appreciate it.
Matt, thank you so much for having me. Kirk, you too.
So we just talked to John Anderson about the five clues that the five clues your marketing will fail you. Please check out John Anderson's blog. There's so many wonderful white papers on there. It's a really good use of your time from a marketing perspective, a practice management perspective. And with that, we will see you on the other side of the mic.